Hello, my name is Michelle Blacksmith, and I am conducting an interview with Dr. Yehuda Williams for the Bridgeport Cultural Arts Center project. Dr. Williams, would you please state your full name and age?
Yehuda Williams, 44, Y-O-H-U-R-U is the spelling.
And would you tell us where this interview is taking place?
At Fairfield University.
And what is today's date?
7/18/2016.
Thank you. So my first question for you, Dr. Williams, is how did you hear about the Arts Center?
I grew up in the city of Bridgeport, and my dad was a music instructor at the Cultural Arts Center. And at the time, I didn't appreciate the significance of the fact that he was employed there. This was just some place that, you know, we would go in the summer. I mean, my dad pretty much mandated that we had to go to work with him because they would always have camp and other things, but it was his opportunity to watch us. But also gave us an opportunity to be enrolled in and participate in all these great classes. So for me, I never thought, you know, my friends were going on vacation and they were doing summer camp and I was going to the Art Center and I have art in the morning and, you know, sculpture in the afternoon and then music, you know, right before we went home. So that was my summers, and that's basically what we did for more than a decade. So it just, you know, that was my entree to the Art Center through my dad.
How old were you when you started going to the Art Center?
I was born in 71, and I think my dad went to work for the Art Center either in 73 or 74, I'm not sure. But, I mean, I've seen photographs that show me as just kind of a little tyke. I must have been 3 or 4 years old, and I was going. And I was always with my dad, so, you know, I imagine as soon as I was able to kind of stand up unassisted. And I went until it closed in 1988.
What are some of your earliest memories of the Art Center?
The things I remember most about the Art Center are the art and the sculpture. It was a pretty unique place. I have the clearest memories about the Gary Crook Center. So this was after they moved to P.T. Barnum. And I remember the way it smelled. I remember going into P.T. and that was something very distinctive as a young person because it was very close to soap making factory and the cesspools and so on and so forth. And we were going into what was the city's, I think, second or third largest housing project at the time. And so there was kind of this jarring experience of, because we lived on the East End, driving into PT, you're passing the scenic, beautiful Seaside Park, and then you're heading into this housing project. And then off the back, sitting off this, you know, side of this, you know, cesspool in that area where, unfortunately, Gary Crook had drowned, is this oasis, which is the Cultural Arts Center, where you walked in and it was a smorgasbord of paint, and sculpture, these amazing teachers, and a collection of young people that, quite frankly, you know, I think that was one of the hidden treasures of the Art Center, is the people that it attracted. Sure, there were kids that came for camp, and there were people who just kind of found their way off the streets, but there was also a core group of very talented young artists and musicians who went there on a regular basis, and I felt very lucky to be around them because they were very motivated, and I think they recognized how important that space was.
Do you remember any of those young talents by name?
Leonardo Drew stands out. He did a painting of Batman and Robin that was, I mean, when I say that it came off the canvas, I'm not doing it justice. And my brother and I, you know, this was the other thing, is there were all these magnificent paintings that just kind of sat in the storage area at the Art Center that students had done. And we looked at that thing for years, and we wanted it, and we wanted to take it home. And finally, I don't know how, I think Leonardo may have given it to us, or and, you know, this magnificent work of art that we had for years, you know, of these iconic heroes that, you know, he presumably had done, you know, during one of his projects there. So he sticks out. There were a number of people whose names escape me now. There was a drummer named Edwin, who's Latino, Puerto Rican. And people talk about the Cultural Arts Center, its connection to the African-American community, but there were a large number of Latinos that made use of those facilities. In fact, the first time I became conscious of, you know, kind of Afro-Latin rhythms and the connection between all of that, my dad, of course, talked about it, but it was at the Art Center, you know, really interacting with the kids from Puerto Rico and the occasional Cubans you would come across. All the people from the Caribbean. I mean, it was a pretty special place in that regard. And then the influences they brought. So, you know, we're Black American, and of course, we're oriented to and interested in the African diaspora. But then you'd have people who were coming, and they would, talk about their music and their culture and their history and their food and all of that, and all that came together at the Art Center.
Tell me some of your memories of the art instructors who were at the Art Center.
The people that stand out, of course, first and foremost was my dad. He was a terrific musician. I probably, at the time, didn't appreciate him as an instructor because he was just my dad. And the things that he did to, I remember talking to Lamont Williams, and he talked about this exercise we would do. And it's funny because Lucinda Anderson mentioned this too. We would do this thing where we place our hands across the drum, and we'd have to do hand raises to strengthen our wrists for playing the kungas. We'd play for hours. And we would do this until our hands hurt. We would come out and complain and, you know, cry and the whole nine. But he was really, you know, strengthening us and making us responsible in our craft. And we would practice for hours, you know, sometimes 4, 5, 6 hours a day, and it never seemed like practice. So he was, you know, great in that regard. But the people that stood out in my mind were people like Rich Statements, who, I mean, the first time I ever really came to appreciate the significance of sculpture was through Rich. And this was an individual who had a deep appreciation and caring for the students that were at the Art Center. And I remember he did things, you know, here's this, you know, white instructor working with predominantly minority students. And he had a minivan, and he would take all of us for Halloween, for example, out to Westport to go trick-or-treating. And he would load 10, 15 kids in this van, and he'd go out. And his argument was, you know, I wanted to, you know, expose the kids from this community to the people in that community and to kind of dispel fear and give these kids an opportunity to really have, to go out and trick-or-treat in a place where there was going to be candy and there were going to be people who could give them something. I just thought that was amazing. He also took kids camping. I remember that. And then he was a great artist on top of it. I remember Wendy Bridgeforth, who, the thing that was phenomenal about her, she would play these records like Evita when we were doing art. And at the time, of course, you're not conscious of what that means, but she was teaching even in the space where we weren't doing art. I mean, we were doing art, but at the same time, you know, she had classical music on, she would have, you know, Broadway soundtracks on. Music and art kind of came together, and she wanted you to feel, you know, the emotion in your work. She was great. Lucinda Anderson was the secretary, presumably that was her job, but I remember her tutoring. She was the accountant, and she would tutor us in math. I remember there were always 3 or 4 kids after school in fall when we would go, and they'd be in trouble for whatever reason. They'd be in with Cindy, and you know, my dad would say, you gotta go and get your math right before you come back here and play the drums. So it was a, you know, pretty special place. And then of course Ben Johnson, the director. And I think what was incredible about Ben is that he could really make a dollar out of 15 cents, both in art and in terms of the way that he ran that, especially toward the end on a shoestring when budgetarily the Art Center was in jeopardy. I remember going to his house for the first time and just being surrounded in art. And this was not just his art, but the art that had been produced by these students. And, you know, he and my dad and Rich and Patty and Wendy, they would take ordinary, common household items and they would just turn them into works of art. And what they were teaching us is to be resourceful, to recognize beauty in the absence of anything that people would associate with something being artistic, and to create something from nothing. And I think that's what they did very well.
Besides those that you've already mentioned at the Art Center, is there anyone else you can think of that sticks out in your mind that you would want to talk about?
I remember the Art Center was interesting because even though the focus was on the arts, there were a lot of people that came through who did a lot with Black history and Black culture. So Jamie Johnson, I remember, used to do poetry with us, very Black Power inspired. The Black National Anthem, the first time that I learned that in its entirety, had always, you know, been enthralled with it, but to see him deliver it. People like The Last Poets, you know, Jamie would recite those works. John Davis was a person who headed up a group called the African Gods, which was a rites of passage organization for young Black men of color. And we both met at the Art Center and at the Rafaela Taylor Center on the East End. And I remember his sons, Mark and Myron. They were very nationalist. They would wear dashikis, and that African names. We learned Yoruba language and culture. So they stand out. I remember a lot of the community people that would come through, Cecil, and of course, Reverend Johnson. And I remember
them. And
when
you say Cecil, you're talking about Cecil Young?
Cecil Young, yeah, Cecil is something else. And I would always remember when he'd come, because he'd come talking about community issues. And but it would always be, you know, there's this opportunity where there you are sitting at the table and you're smelling the paint and you're hearing the music and he's talking politics at one of the long tables, where the folks are kind of over in the corner talking about something. And it emphasizes the importance of the Art Center as a community space. It was a community center at its core. You know, it wasn't a 9-to-5 place. My dad never left at 5 o'clock. We were always there to 7, 8 o'clock. And in the winter during when we had rehearsals or they would be putting on a Kwanzaa program, we'd be there longer. In the summer when we rehearsed for Harambee Fiesta, we'd be there longer. And my dad, in a lot of ways, adopted a lot of those kids, but all the instructors did. Those were their children, and they took a deep sense of personal responsibility in them. And I remember my first job, or my second job, was at the Art Center. I got a summer youth work there to work with young people as a drum instructor, because I've been doing it for so long. And we put together a band, and we would go out in the courtyard, which was in PT. We would bring the instruments across the street, and we would play for the people in the community. We did that every day, and the kids were just so excited because here they were sharing something. You know, it didn't just happen in this little space across the street, this red brick building. They were bringing it out and sharing it with the people in the community. And there were many a day when we would have a nice train of kids that would follow us back across the street because they wanted to do that too.
I'm curious, do you still drum?
I do.
Mm-hmm. And so what are the ways in which the Art Center has had an impact on you?
They're very tangible things. The Art Center made me a performer. And I say that in a way that Shakespeare talked about the entire world being a stage. And most of what we do is an element of performance. Great teachers are great performers. Great speakers are great performers. And the Art Center taught me the importance of being able to stand up in front of a group of people, to be prepared, to work hard, and to be able to deliver. I resented those days when my dad, you know, we wanted to be home watching Mork and Mindy, and we'd be at the Art Center at, you know, 9 o'clock at night rehearsing with the kids. And I came to appreciate that's what hard work was. I think about people like Lamont Williams, which was one of the students there who I, you know, was deeply competitive with. He was an amazing drummer, probably the best drummer I'd ever seen. And I would come home from school and I would drop my bags at the door and I'd go downstairs and I'd practice for an hour and a half because I thought somewhere in the universe Lamont must be practicing. And the two of us, you know, were going to meet in the summer. And this would, and then he shared recently he was thinking the same thing. But that, it was a friendly competition. It was a competition born of trying to make one another better. I remember a very deep sense of brotherhood with the people that lived there because we came from all over the city. When it moved to PT, it became somewhat of a West End phenomenon. But the fact of the matter is people forget that schools would arrive, and especially during the fall and spring. In the summer, they would bring summer camps through. And so you'd meet people from all over. And you made some lasting friendships as a result.
What impact do you think, Dr. Williams, that the Art Center had on the community?
I think it was threefold. I think it gave people a space to congregate and to feel a part of a community. Bridgeport had gone through deindustrialization in the late 60s, early 70s, and so I remember my uncle worked at Jenkins Valves, and so many of my family or people that I knew had worked at places like GE. As those companies folded and in many cases moved to other places and those jobs became less abundant, there were fewer and fewer places where people could kind of get together, especially in secular spaces. So we're not talking about what's happening on Sunday morning, but just spaces in the community where people could come together and talk and be together. And they would normally do those things around their children. So we think about the importance of the PTA and public schools in that regard. The Art Center was special because this was a place in a very low-income area, one of the city's largest housing complexes, public housing complexes, where there was high crime. And it gave people a sense that there were individuals who cared enough about them to be there, to be invested in the success of those children, and also to provide the space where people could just come together and be, and that was important. And I remember many a day, from the political discussions that happened on there to the conflict resolution that happened in the Art Center. Ben Johnson may have been a master artist, but he was also one of these people who, and I remember this, you know, advocated for children who got in trouble. I remember many police officers stopping through the Art Center and having questions about young people and then vouching for young people and making the case that, you know, this person, you know, should have been in this space and we were closed on this day and this is why we're here and this is why we need it. I think the second piece was just to awaken in young women and men of color an importance and appreciation for the arts. And that's something that's never left me. I lament the fact that you don't have arts in the public schools in a way that you once did. But it was people called Bridgeport the Park City. In the late 60s, early 70s, it was the art city. You think about people from Westport coming here and people in the surrounding area and their appreciation for the arts, but they wanted to invest in and build that here too. And you had this cadre of very progressive artists and musicians who were willing to do that. And who in their own way, I mean, you know, my dad talked about how working at the Art Center allowed him to play, to practice. You know, and it gave him a space to do that and still to be employed, even though he didn't have health insurance. He said, you know, this, it let me take care of my family, but it let me be an artist. But in the process, he and Ben and Patty all allowed us to grow as artists, to be, to recognize the importance of expressive culture and to build that in ourselves. And I think that leads to the third piece. It made us a community. The Art Center was a community center at its core. It wasn't about pastel colors. It wasn't about the kiln. It wasn't about the fact that we could make popcorn. It was about the fact that when you walked out of that building onto the little patch of grass that was out there, one of the only green spaces in an otherwise urban jungle, we came together and we were all invested in the continuation of that. I remember they would have school lunches for us and just be a little juice and a little milk and a you know, bologna sandwich wrapped in. And I remember how important that was to kids there. And I remember one day, probably one of the first summers I'd gone, this little boy was sitting next to me and he was deaf. It stands out in my mind to this day. And I was crying because I didn't get one of the juices. And of course my dad's there and there's plenty of juice. And this little boy looked over and gave me his juice. It was the selflessness of that act in that space, the recognition that it was a great equalizer, the understanding that we all were disadvantaged, but we weren't disadvantaged because here we were in the space. And I think kids that otherwise would have, you know, been scrapping for meager resources found commonality and camaraderie and brotherhood and being able to work together. Mm-hmm. I'll put that back up.
So, Dr. Williams, do you think that our community would benefit from the recreation or the reopening of the Art Center today?
I think what you would see in working on this project with Michelle Blacksmith has given me an opportunity to see this in a very tangible way. People talked about the crime and the violence in the city of Bridgeport, but you see an explosion in that after the closing of programs like the Cultural Arts Center. You see, as there's a defunding and a de-investment, a lack of investment in those types of community programs and initiatives, people not having pathways to community, not having opportunities to engage in things that would build discussion. You know, probably one of the most underutilized aspects of the Art Center was there was a little office in the back that had been, I guess, Bill or Rich's office, and it was a library. It was full of books. And you could take those books out or do whatever it is that you wanted with them, somewhere on art, somewhere on politics, somewhere on history, somewhere on drama, somewhere on music. But again, it was kind of this coming together space. Somewhere in the mid-80s, they started putting up basketball courts, and they stopped putting up playgrounds and stopped investing in programs with human beings who were supposed to work one-on-one and to teach you something, to be mentors, to be role models. The instructors at the Art Center, I got the impression, never really had a lot. But they were happy and they were content and they were giving back and they were working with us and building in us the same sense and appreciation for our community. It meant something to put on those dashikis that my mom would sew, and we'd all go to the Harambee Fiesta, and on Monday morning in school people would be like, wasn't that you guys up on the stage? And you'd say, yeah, that was us. So yeah, I think that it would benefit from a bringing a resurgence of that to just build community and help connect people.
And lastly, Dr. Williams, why did you say yes to doing this project with the Bridgeport Public Library?
As a historian, I spent the last 30 years of my life writing about, and, well, the last 20 years of my life writing about, and the last 30 years of my life studying and trying to come to grips with the African-American experience and why things have developed in the ways that they have. In my most recent book, I talk about the 6 degrees of segregation that people of color face in housing and education and Jim Crow justice, which we're seeing on our streets today. And we very rarely look at the interventions, those successful things that individuals like Ben Johnson, like Reverend Johnson, like Patty Melvin, you know, self-taught, did to try to make things better. We want to focus on the major players, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King's and the Rosa Parks. And we don't ever talk about, you know, the foot soldiers. And in communities all across this country, from Washington, D.C., to Denver, Colorado, to Bridgeport, Connecticut, you had programs like this, centers like this. I like to think of what was happening in Bridgeport as a mini Harlem Renaissance. You know, there was a Black Renaissance that was taking place in the city built around the arts. It brought people together from various places. My dad was from Mullen, South Carolina. Cindy was from South Carolina. Rich was from Indiana. And, you know, they all came together in the space. They were migrants. They had experienced deindustrialization. Many of them had made stops in other spaces. You know, my dad had gone to Philadelphia first and had come here and gone back to Philadelphia. They were politicized. They were coming out of the civil rights and Black Power movements. And they were committed to the idea that, you know, there was something inherently valuable in art. Booker T. Washington famously in the Atlanta Exposition speech says, you know, no race can learn to prosper until it recognizes there's as much dignity in tilling a field than there is in writing a poem. And I always felt that that was unfortunate because it devalued the fact that one, in writing a poem, in engaging in the arts, finds the power to express oneself and the power to change oneself and to grow. It is, you know, tilling a different kind of a field, a fertile intellectual space where people can actually grow and self-actualize. And I think the Arts Center did that. So to answer your question, I think the reason I said yes is that in talking to Michelle about the project and just thinking about this, I wondered how many seeds had been planted in me and that were blooming in a way that I hadn't recognized until that moment when she said, do you remember this and do you want to participate in this? And, and all of a sudden my entire life kind of came full circle. And I said, I think a lot of that started right there at the Gary Cook Center.
Thank you very much, Dr. Williams.
Thank you.